Good afternoon. We'll call the Veterans and Military Affairs Subdivision to order. It's 4:07 on Monday, February 23rd, and a quorum is now present. Members, today we're going to hear two change item presentations, one from the Department of Military Affairs, one from the Department of Veterans Affairs. After that, we'll take up Senator Saxog's SF 425, the Military and Veterans Affairs Budget, with the appropriations authored by Senator Saxog. First, we'll hear from Mr. Don Kerr, the Executive Director of Department of Military Affairs. Mr. Kerr, if you could come forward and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. I'm here to provide a briefing to you on our change items today. I did provide more information in your packets than is necessary for the briefing, so I don't plan to brief all of the slides that we presented you. I'm going to go through the change items, and I provided the others as background. I'll talk my way through that as I get closer to the end of the presentation, but I'd be happy to answer any questions at any time as we move along. So, Mr. Chair, as we went through our planning process to identify what we needed to request this year for the buy-in and moving forward, we identified really a couple of areas that we called problem areas, and we worked up problem statements and used the military decision-making process to make recommendations to the Adjutant General on how to proceed. And we were able to nest these two problems into a single solution. First of all, we identified that over the last couple of years, we have been under-executing the enlistment incentives appropriation, and over a much longer period of time, we've actually had a shortfall in the maintenance appropriation. We also identified that the general support appropriation would have a small shortfall if we didn't make some sort of an adjustment, but we did identify that we'd be able to stay within the agency's overall budget by simply reapportioning money within those allocations, and so we are not asking for any increase in our budget for the coming biennium in the big picture. So our staff work resulted then in three change items. Number one, we'd like to request a one-time transfer of $10 million from the incentives appropriation. And I should note that the incentives appropriation is carry-forward money. That does not expire at the end of the biennium. That has resulted in us acquiring a fairly substantial balance over the past 5 years, and I'll talk about that a little bit when I get deeper into the presentation. We also think we need to rebalance then the annual allocation, reducing the amount that's going into that appropriation by about $3 million and move that into the maintenance appropriation, and move a little bit of money out of that into the general support appropriation. And I'll talk in a little bit more detail about what we intend to do with those changes in funding as we go forward. So first of all, we identified a lot of facts and assumptions that were necessary, and I've provided these to you in the packet. I'll talk about a couple of them, but first of all, it became apparent that we've really been requesting less money than we should have been per statute in the maintenance appropriation. Minnesota statute directs that we request 1% of the archivist. And Archivus is the computer program that the Department of Administration uses to identify capital assets. We're supposed to be using Archivus to identify 1% of that replacement value, and our replacement value for our facilities is just over $1 billion, so that would infer that we should then be asking for about $10 million in maintenance appropriation annually. We've only been receiving 6.66, so we've been underfunded there. We also, the fact number three, the RCTMP, that stands for Readiness Center Transformation Master Plan. More or less coincidentally, the Senate of the United States directed that the National Guard review all of its facilities, and the methodology that they used in that analysis showed a replacement value of $1.59 billion. So we understand that the statute points us to Archivus. We're willing to live with the Archivus number, but we also think that the analogy or the methodology that was used and RCTMP indicates that we're definitely not overshooting by using the Archivist replacement value. Fact 7, I'll call your attention to, that really gets back to our general support appropriation. Over the last 3 years, I've kind of identified a challenge in our agency in that we have a fairly large fleet, about 75 wheeled vehicles that we maintain as state vehicles, and we really never had a replacement plan for them. The oldest of these was bought in 1984, and it has a lot of miles on it, and there really was no plan for the logical replacement of this fleet. And we felt that was something we needed to take a look at, a life cycle replacement plan, and therefore are asking for some additional money to be moved into our general support account from the incentives appropriation to really cover down on that wheeled vehicle replacement over the long term. And those vehicles range from vans to support the housing staff at Ripley to Caterpillars and dump trucks and trucks that support our maintenance staff to drive around the state. And so it's not as simple as just saying, well, we need to replace them all every 7 years or anything like that, because we have certain vehicles like the electrician's bucket truck that they use to work on power lines at Camp Ripley. They don't put very many miles on that. It's very necessary when they have to use it, but it's something that we can get an extended lifespan out of. So I went back to the staff and had them take a look at each individual vehicle and say, realistically, knowing what our use factors are, what's a reasonable expectation for a life cycle for this particular vehicle? And we compiled all that data and have come up with a plan then to take us into the future. We also know that employee costs are going to continue to rise, at least we believe that to be the case, as we see the economy improving. The second page of facts, we expect at this time, based on our current utilization rate, to have about $20 million left in the incentives appropriation at the end of June. And if we went on the current course without making this adjustment, that means on the 1st of July, we'd put $10.3 million more in there and we'd wind up with $30 million, knowing that we're going to use about $6.5. So clearly that was something that we needed to make an adjustment for. We've looked at the five-year average expenditures to be about $6.5 million, and so we think that's a much more reasonable expectation. We made a couple of assumptions, but we also used fact-based analysis in looking at where we are. And so as we looked at how much money we could affordably take out of the incentives appropriation before we broke that, because the last thing we want to do is tell you to take money out of the appropriation and then come back here next year and ask you to put money back in it. We looked at how we could do the math to see where we would run through zero with that appropriation after taking these things into effect. And I'll show you that in a little bit. But we wanted to ensure that we didn't run out of money in that appropriation any earlier than 2019 based on a worst-case scenario failure.
Excuse me, Mr. Kerr. We have a question from Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kerr, I know that in looking at the money that comes from the federal, 75% of the money that you and Military Affairs get, 75% from federal and 25% state. Is that the same thing with this incentives appropriations and the maintenance, that it's a 75-25, or is there a different calculation or formula for that?
Mr. Kirk.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, there is not directly the same relationship, but there is an indirect relationship in that we established within the regulation that governs the use of that state fund, we directed our service members to use federal appropriations first. So as service members, they may be eligible for a number of different benefits, some funded by the federal government, some funded by state government. Before 2008, we didn't require the use of the federal funding first. But in about 2008, we required our service members to use the federal tuition assistance program before they used state tuition reimbursement. And we think that's one of the major reasons that we saw utilization drop within the state tuition reimbursement program. Though I will tell you that when we took a broader look at that, we actually found both programs are really declining in use, and our total number of folks using the program is in decline. We think there are a number of reasons for that. Part of that is the GI Bill benefit. More of our service members have become eligible for the active component GI Bill in the last few years, and we think some of them may be using that first and holding their state tuition eligibility in abeyance until some future date for further education. But we also think that the improving economy is causing some of our service members to choose to go to work rather than go to school, and that's reducing some of our utilization as well. We're having a lot of trouble really getting our arms around that definitively, though, because we really don't have anything in place to capture that data over time to do comparative analysis with what's happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago, beyond a little bit of conjecture. There's some data that we can look at, but we don't really have service member participation in the gathering of that data.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
So thank you. So there's one part of our appropriation, Mr. Chair, that I did not address in our plan today, and that's the emergency appropriation. That's Fact 16. So the fourth category of funding that we receive from the state of Minnesota is the emergency appropriation. That's based on an average of the last 8 years' use of emergency funds for state active duty, throwing out the high and the low. So that will be based on a calculation that is done by MMB, and that will actually be reduced in the coming year because we've used less state active duty in the last couple of years. Consequently, the average is coming down. So I provided a slide in here with some background specifically on the enlistment incentives account. I'm spending a lot of time talking about that because I really want to go out of my way to assure you that we've done a lot of staff work to make sure that we aren't going to break this program by making these changes. But we're doing a couple of pretty radical things, the one-time transfer and the long-term reduction of funds that go into that. But we're quite confident that we're still going to be able to perform or to provide this benefit to our service members without any reduction. So I provided this chart in the packet to give you an idea. Our staff developed three courses of action that we briefed to the Adjutant General, and he selected the one that is the red line on your chart. That started with a $10 million transfer of funding and a longer-term increase to the maintenance appropriation. So this is the highest payback over the long term for the maintenance appropriation, even though it was the smallest amount of one-time appropriation. But that is the one that the Adjutant General selected, and you'll notice the red arrow out there. That indicates the place we're in. The worst-case scenario, if we lost all federal tuition assistance and the U of M increased their tuition by 6.12% per year, we wouldn't run out of money in this account until sometime in the late 2019, early 2020. Obviously, we'll be monitoring this program as we go through execution, and we'll never allow ourselves to get to that point. We do have the ability to throttle back in our incentives programs to have some control over how much obligation we're taking on. But I guess what I'm trying to tell you is we're very confident that we're not going to break this program by making these changes to it. And our objective really is to try to figure out how we can put the same amount of money into the account that's coming out of it so that we can make that line go horizontal instead of pointing down and flatline somewhere between $0 and $2 million. We think a $2 million buffer is probably more appropriate for our program, and that's where we're trying to drive it to. So having said that, this gives you a little bit of history as we looked at this. The two programs that really pay for tuition among our service members in Minnesota are the Federal Tuition Assistance Program, which is the green line, and then the State Tuition Reimbursement Program, which is the blue line. As you can see, going back to 2008, we actually were executing a combined total of $16 million from those two sources. And then we kind of plateaued at the $14 million phase, and then rather dramatically it dropped in 2012 down to the $10 million line on both ends. And you can see the gradual decline in the State Tuition Reimbursement Program. Through 2010, we really were receiving about the right amount of money in the appropriation. But since then, we're just not executing it at the level that we were previously. We think it's a great benefit. It's important to the competitiveness of the National Guard. We want to see this continue at the rate that it is. But for whatever reason, we're simply not utilizing it at the same rate. And we think we can take some risk here. So again, the three change items that we're requesting, a one-time transfer of $10 million from the balance, from the incentives to the maintenance appropriation. And I'll get into the maintenance appropriation. So the next question you should have is, well, what are you going to do with that $10 million? I'll tell you that in a minute. We think we need to annually reallocate $3 million a year from the incentives appropriation into maintenance, and an additional $460,000 a year from the incentives to the general support account. Again, those change items will result in no growth to our overall agency budget. So this is detail on what we plan to do with the additional funding. We did factor in, based on the guidance of Minnesota Management and Budget, a factor of 1.8% increase as we calculated how much obligation we had to continue to pay the salaries of our service members and civilian employees in the state. And these are the things that we chose. So we considered those costs to be must fund. And these are the things that were below the line, if you will. In military budgeting or federal government budgeting, we use something called an unfunded requirement. These are the things that if we were not to get these change items in our general support appropriation, these are the things that would be below the line, unfunded requirements.
Mr. Kerr, before we go too far ahead here, chart that gave the federal tuition and state tuition and total, are those funds kept separate or are they commingled? And you mentioned before using some federal funds before state funds. So those you're able to keep them separate and use federal funds before the state funds. Am I correct on that?
Mr. Chair, that's exactly correct. They're actually different programs, but they're both administered by the same team at our office, and so we're able to monitor what the utilization is of the federal tuition assistance program, and we do require our service members to use that that's really changing. We actually just changed the guidance because the feds have changed the guidance and made the FTA program less lucrative here in the last year, and we're seeing some changes to that. to the extent that so few of our service members would be eligible for FTA now, moving forward, we're not requiring them to use that first. There are really quite a few options available to our service members. We provide counsel to them to help them find the way. Many of them prefer to use the federal program because it's actually a payment upfront program, whereas ours is strictly reimbursement. The risk in the upfront payment is if they don't meet the requirements for participation, then the feds have to go back and recoup that money. Mm-hmm. Because we only reimburse for passing grades, the service member incurs the obligation of paying for the class and we reimburse them. In the end, the outcome is they get their education paid for. The difference is we incur less risk of losing funds and having to recoup them. But we do watch both programs very closely. The missing wheel here is the GI Bill. The GI Bill is actually not administered by the Department of Defense. The GI Bill is administered by the Department of Veterans Affairs at the federal level. And so we don't have as good a visibility into which of our service members are using their GI Bill benefit. But at any rate, our program, the State Tuition Reimbursement Program, will only reimburse up to 100%. We can't go beyond that through all sources. So if they're getting 80% of their tuition paid by the feds, we'll only throw in the 20% match. And if that isn't enough, then we go to the state GI Bill program, which is a true last dollar in program. But there are really a lot of ways for someone who is interested in joining the National Guard to pay for college without having a big student loan at the end.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, I included this slide to give you an idea of our life cycle replacement plan. We have an immediate requirement to replace 24 of our vehicles. Well, we only know about that requirement because we asked about it. So we know that we're not going to immediately go out and spend $642,500 to buy new vehicles. We know that the amount that we're requesting to put into that program, which is $282,000 a year, basically, by 2020, where I've got the green box circled, that's where if we're able to execute this program, we should be to level ground. We'll be floating where we are with a long-term sustainable program by 2020. So we're not trying to fix the whole problem this year. We're looking at this from a much longer view. Okay, so I've talked about that. The next thing I want to do is talk to you a little bit about what we intend to do with the $10 million that we want to move into the maintenance account. So I'm only going to talk about the programs that we are specifically identifying for that. Well, I'm going to start a little bit with where we are. So most of you know that we have facilities around the state of Minnesota, 61 different communities. Our facilities range in age from 100 years down to brand new. We'll be opening one in Stillwater, but you can see that there's a broad, the mean of our forces or of our fleet is in the 1950-1960 range for construction. So they're all pretty old. As part of that Readiness Center Transformation Master Plan research that we had to do for the U.S. Senate, we actually had qualified engineers go out and do a full assessment of all of our facilities and gave us a numerical score for all of them. We're using this information to help update Archivus, but we're also using this information to determine our own prioritization. As you can see from this chart, a very small number of our facilities scored in the good category, and an even smaller number scored in the failing category, which is good news. But a much larger percentage than we would have expected scored in the poor category. And that's our area of concern, because what we find is that the poor buildings cost more to repair, and we have more of them. And so that turns into a self-fulfilling prophecy if we aren't very cautious about that. So we really want to strike swiftly and try to take advantage of some what we believe is kind of a one-time opportunity with this $10 million change. And I will tell you that I included at the end of this briefing, we also have a $12 million bonding request into the governor. We don't know how much the governor is going to support of that request, but I wanted to show you all of the projects on the list. So you'll see at the back of the packet the projects that we're proposing for a bonding request. And the reason that's important is, really, we consider all of these projects that we're going to show you, whether we're going to use the money from the transfer or bonded funds, to be important to upgrading our fleet. The ones in the bonding category are actually higher priority for us. So if we don't get the bonding request, we will slide projects off the bonding list into this other list in priority. So I don't know if that made sense. it seems a little illogical, but because of the way the timing came out of when we're asking for this money versus when the bonding bill is going to be, or the governor's bonding request is going to be released,
Mr. Chair,
a little bit backwards in priority.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kerr, I see you have Army National Guard on here, and of course I served in the Air National Guard, and I'm just wondering if you're going to be addressing the needs of the Air National Guard also, or are we just talking about Army for now?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, because the Air National Guard facilities are all located on federal property, they're 100% federally funded for maintenance, replacement, and repair. So the only piece that the state of Minnesota is on the hook for are Army installations that are not on federal property. So in the last 10 years, we've really made a big investment in the Arden Hills Army training site for new construction. One of the reasons for that was because we don't need a state match to build. When we build on federal property, the feds pick up 100% of the cost and 100% of the maintenance moving forward. And so obviously that's something that's very important to us for the state of Minnesota as a good investment. And it's reduced our requirement to come back to the legislature and ask for additional money to build new buildings because we're putting them on federal property. So over the short term, it's going to be about $100 million that we're going to have put into Arden Hills, every dime federal, by the end of this decade. And we're pretty happy about that. But that's why there are no Air National Guard facilities addressed here, because those are all federally funded.
Thank you.
Please continue. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Senator Stumpf has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just looking at some of the projects, the bonding projects, and the one down in Owatonna, I remember the committee visited down there, and I can't quite remember what I should. This is terrible, but did we fund that in the bonding bill? I thought we did.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stuff, no, sir, you did not.
Did not, okay.
Our bonding request was in excess of $10 million. The governor supported $7.62 million on it, and the bonding request only supported $3.1 million for the agency. And so Owatonna was not one of the projects that we were able to fund from the bonding bill last year. And that's why it's on top of our list
of
bonding projects this year.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Please continue.
So, Mr. Chair, these are the projects that we plan to fund through the one-time transfer. And these are the individual project breakdowns, and I won't spend any time going through those, but I'll leave those with the committee for your consideration. And then, as I stated, I included the capital budget request in here because the reality is these are our first four priorities. And so if we get short in the bonding bill from our request, these would go to the top of our transfer list, if that makes sense. And with that, Mr. Chair, I subject myself to your questions.
Any questions from the members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Mr. Kerr, you've got your top four here, and Senator Stumpf already mentioned Owatonna. Since Owatonna was mentioned, is that back in the request for? I guess I'm looking at the wrong page here. I don't have a page number, but. I'm seeing St. Cloud, Detroit Lakes, Brainerd, Wadena. What am I looking at? That's not.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, sure. Senator Anderson, so our number one projects are listed in the bonding request.
I see it. Okay.
And that it's a little, like I say, it's a little confusing, and there are a couple of reasons for that. So anytime we're going to do an addition to a facility, we have to get specific approval from the legislature. And so typically we try to do those in our bonding request or in some other form of legislation. If we're just doing maintenance and repair, we don't need specific authority to do that. And that's why we list some of the projects that include an expansion will be included in the bonding request. But Owatonna is our number one priority. That's the first one we'll fund. We expect to do that through bonding. We have to have it in statute because we are doing an expansion of that facility. So one way or the other, we'll have to make sure that we get that identified either through the transfer, the language for the transfer, or the language in the bonding bill.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Any other questions?
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would note that I provided for the members of the committee a copy of our annual report. That is available for review at their leisure. Thank you very much for your time and attention. And
thank you very much. Okay. I will move on to the Department of Veterans Affairs. And Mr. Mike, Legislative Director of the Department of Veterans Affairs. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I'm Mike McKelney, Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And in the interest of time, we'll just brief off the slides that you have provided. And again, we are here. I would preface this. We will have our opportunity in the future to discuss our bonding issues, which we're not prepared to talk about today. We're just going to present the governor's change items, as you well know. But I do want to take just a quick minute to kind of provide context again around our agency. Our mission is dedicated to serving veterans and their families. We do that through the operation of five state veterans homes that provide skilled nursing, domiciliary, and adult daycare center. We have four major program areas that have about 20 activities within each of those combined four programs. And we're able to do our mission with the strong partnerships we have with the U.S. Veterans Affairs, Veterans Service Organizations, County Veterans Service Offices, as well as nonprofits and for-profit organizations. One of the things we want to highlight is the fact that there's about 369,000 veterans in the state currently, which is approximately 7% of the state's population. Again, they're spread, of course, throughout 87 counties. And one note is about 66,000 of those veterans have served since 9/11, and approximately about 43,000 within a combat zone. And the average age has been 35 years old. Our largest population of veterans is our Vietnam-era veterans, which are approximately 126,000 of those out of that 369. Approximately 8% are female, and the other 92% are male. One thing I want to mention also is, as we look at that population, 21% of those veterans are age 65 to 74. That's approximately 80,000 veterans. And then approximately 24% are 75 years old or older, which is 90,000 plus of our veterans out of that 369. So we have a very old or aging veteran population here in the state. At this point in time, I have our finance director, John Powers, here, and he's going to just give you a brief overview of our finances in the agency.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Members, I believe it's slide 7. Veterans Affairs has a $270 million
biannual. Please speak your name for the record. Your name for the tape.
Mr. Chairman, I'm John Powers. I'm the Finance Director for Veterans Affairs.
Thank you.
Again, slide 7. Veterans Affairs has a $270 million biannual budget. That's all funds. Of that amount, $125.5 million of it comes from a direct appropriation, of which $93 million of that goes to our veterans' homes and $32.5 million for our programs and services. An additional $94.8 million of revenue is received from VA per diem and resident maintenance charges. An additional $42.5 million is expected for construction, mainly at the Minneapolis site, along with a cemetery in southeastern Minnesota down in the Preston area. $2.4 million is collected from the SOT license plates, along with the cemetery fees and some of the smaller canteens that we have in two of the homes. $4.3 million is located in resident trust funds and gift accounts, and about $500,000 is used for the Minnesota GI Bill that we administer, which is an open appropriation. It's a $6 million appropriation per year. And $3.5 of that million we transferred to the Office of Higher Ed for them to administer that program. At the bottom of the page there, too, in FY15, we had 1,182 FTEs. We expect that to be reduced by 74 FTEs going into FY16 with the current base budget. And we'll have an additional reduction of 11 FTEs going into FY17. On the next slide, we show basically expenditures by fund. 46.6% of it comes from the general fund. 35.1% of it's from the other special revenue, which is, again, the VA per diem and maintenance charges. And 15.8% of it is from federal construction grants. In the middle of that slide, you can see the breakdown of the different programs. The health care makes up 86.7% of our budget, and programs and services 13.3%. On the right, there are expenditures by category. 58.4% is payroll, 18.6% is other operating expenses, and 15.6% is capital outlay. With that being said, if we pull out the capital outlay, which is basically for construction, we look at about 75% of our budget goes toward payroll. The next slide is pretty busy, but I'll give you a quick overview. Columns A and B represent what I showed earlier in a pie chart, but we have a $270 million budget. 46.6 of that comes from the general fund, 35 from the miscellaneous special revenue fund, and 15.8 again is from the federal construction dollars. Columns C, D, and E represent our veterans programs and services programs, and 12.1% of our overall budget comes from the general fund, which is a good majority of that for the programs and services. Columns F, G, and H represent our health care side. $93 million of that, again, is transferred from the general fund into the miscellaneous special revenue fund. I've showed it here as a general fund, which is 34.5% of our overall budget. 35.1% is in special revenue, and the other big piece is in the federal fund, which is $41 million. Slide 10 shows the breakdown of the programs and services, which is made up of, again, the Minnesota GI Bill. We expect to spend about $500,000 there and transfer $3.5 million of that to higher ed. Our budget activities consist of veteran services, which is our administration, leadership, and planning, human resources, communication, finance, legislative affairs, affirmative action, and IT initiatives, which is about $5.9 million for the biennium, which makes up about 16.5% of the budget, the program budget, or 2.2% of the overall budget. Programs and services is our other major program area. The State Soldiers Assistance Program, the CORE Program, Link Vet, State Cemeteries, State Approving Agency, the GI Bill, Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, and the Gold Star Program, which is $16.7 million, which is a majority of 46.8% of the program budget. The other area is the Claims and Outreach, which is our claims offices, the Veterans Outreach, Tribal Veterans Service Office, Higher Ed, and County Veterans Service Office, and Veterans Service Organization grants, and of course, support our troops. And that makes up $12.5 million, which is 35.2% of the budget. Overall, in FY17, with this budget, we expect about 72.6 FTEs in this area. The next slide is our health care program. You can see the top line there. We spend about $12 million, or about 5.4% of our program budget on our administrative costs in that area. The Minneapolis Veterans Home is our largest home, and it's $95 million, which makes up about 40.7% of the program budget, or 35% of the budget. And then I also have the Minnesota Building Expansions, which is $41.6 million, or 15.4% of the overall budget. And then as we go down the list here, we can see the different homes. Hastings, Silver Bay, Laverne, Fergus Falls makes up anywhere from 7 to 9% of our budget in each of those locations. And again, the FY17 FTE amounts are 1,024.5.
Mr. Chair, this brings us to our first budget change item recommendation from the governor. He's recommended an increase in 2016 of $2.1 million and $4.3 in 2017. And what that's going to do is allow us to maintain 30.8 FTEs in 16 and a total in 17 of 60.6 FTEs. Earlier, Mr. Powers talked to you about the fact that we expect to lose 74 plus FTE. So the governor's change item recommendation will allow us to maintain 60 of those. So we'll still be at a deficit of nearly 15 FTEs for the biennium. And again, MDVA's primary cost are our staff. We have highly trained and highly skilled staff within the veterans' homes providing health care for the HERO residents that we house there. And much like the rest of the nation and the state, we understand there's an increase in health care costs of about 4.5% annually. And so the governor's change item has bestowed upon us about a 5% biennial increase. So that's what we are working with. And again, it's very important. We're at the height of 14 years of ongoing war and conflict. So veterans are being created every day. And we're at a point in our veterans' home health care where we're providing a higher standard of care through the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid certification that we're reaching and spreading out among all five homes. The slide 14 provides a little bit more of the analysis of how those amounts came to be, if there's any questions on that. If not, I'll skip to the second governor's change item. Much like, or exactly like military affairs, we too look at Archibus and realize that statute tells us we should be calculating about a 1% cost of our building replacement for repair and betterment. But what the governor's recommending is about a half a percent on that. So we're requesting $1 million for our 50 plus buildings statewide. We have about 1 million plus square feet that we maintain on over 290 acres. And again, those buildings were built in the late 1800s up to currently under construction, as many of you were just at the veterans home not long ago. And so that will enable us to have uninterrupted operations with those and reduce future maintenance costs with those buildings. The third and final governor's change item is a request for the Support Our Troops Fund. We're not asking for any additional funding with this or any additional FTEs, but what we're asking for is the ability to have grant-making authority, and this will put us a little bit more on par with the way Military Affairs does it, which is who we share those funds with. Right now, we've got limited use for those that we're authorized to use those SOT funds for within the department, so we're seeking grant-making authority. And, Mr. Chair, moving on to slide 17, I'm just going to turn it back over to John Powers so he can wrap this up. This slide 17 kind of creates a better picture of this budget.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, columns A and B show the actual FY14-15 as we are operating right now. Again, we have $126 million. This is general fund only. We have 1,182 FTEs. In FY16, we'll have $125 million budget. Columns C and D and E represent. Column C is the actual budget. D is the actual FTE numbers that we anticipate. The number below the 74.5 is a reduction that we'll have to make within the Veterans Service Program of 8.9 positions, and you can see how that grows to another two positions in FY17. As we move down the page there, we'll have a reduction of 65.6 positions in our healthcare side, an additional nine positions in FY17. And as we go further down that column there in D&E, we'll have a reduction of 73.6 total and 85.3 in FY17. If we move over to the right there in columns F, G, and H, with the governor's recommendation, on the programs and services side, he's requesting a 1.8% increase to that program, which is $330,000 for the biennium, which would pay for an additional 1.5 positions. Moving further down the line here, under the health care, the governor is recommending $6.1 million, which will fund us 29 positions in FY16 and an additional 59 positions in FY17. And then, of course, the repair and betterment funding of $1 million. The bottom line is the governor is recommending $7.438 million for the biennium. We will still have FTE reduction of 43 positions in FY16 and almost 25 positions in FY17.
Hey, Mr. Chair, that concludes our presentation subject to your questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McKelney, it says in the narrative here from your change items that we have that veterans experience unemployment at a higher rate than the general population. And I'm just wondering what that percentage is, because I was told this morning by Mr. Finley from the Department of Economic Development that he had a number too, and I said, well, you know, there's numbers that keep floating around. I hear 11%. I had 8%. It makes this a higher rate, and I'm just wondering what you consider or what the department considers as a higher rate.
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, I too have spoken with Mr. Finley, and when we prepared these documents, there was probably a different veteran unemployment rate than there is today. And I understand, Mr. Finley, we get a lot of our information from DEED as well. And we understand that the underemployment rate is very high for veterans. I don't know exactly what the number is, but I do realize that DEED has provided us information that our younger veterans, as we've seen in the past, the 18 to 26 year old demographic was the veterans that had the high unemployment rates. And what I think they're finding now is that many of them are in college, and so that kind of offsets that rate. And what Deed has told me recently is that the rate of that demographic, 18 to 26 year olds, as far as veterans go, is not much different than the general public. So I don't know exactly what the veteran unemployment rate is today, Senator, so I would have to get back to you on that.
Well, Mr. Chair, this morning, Mr. McKelney, was that the unemployment rate, and I thought I've heard that the regular general population were at 5.6 or somewhere in that neighborhood. They're saying that the unemployment rate for veterans is 3.7. That's according to Mr. Finley. So that's even below if 5% is the average, the normal population for the state. So I'm just concerned that we're saying that there's a big unemployment rate, but then there really isn't.
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, I think one of the issues, too, is, as I pointed out earlier, much of our veteran population, I think it's 160,000 out of that 369 in the state, are over age 65. So many of those are more than likely out of the labor force and wouldn't necessarily be counted. So that's one factor. The other factor is as we've seen in the years prior, the actual metric or the demographic that they were looking at, the age group, was the 18 to 26 year old, and I think sometimes that may have been confused with the overall rate. So the overall veteran rate, which is the 18 to whatever age, is low. It's that 3.5 that DEED has provided.
Thank you.
Senator Gazelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, a follow-up on that, too. I think, you know, the more accurate information we can get related to that, particularly that younger age and which ones are in college then and are we counting that as unemployment numbers, that would be extremely helpful. I hope that that's the case, that they're actually in college and there's less unemployment. To me, that would be a real win. We've talked about a number of issues related to veterans, and you know, some people were asking me, well, how can, you know, these, you know, well-trained folks, you know, have a hard time? And other than going back to school, I would get that they should easily fit in because they have some of the best skills that we want out there. And so whatever we can get for that, I'd really appreciate. And I hope that in the end I'm hearing that it's actually a success story, how we transfer veterans back in.
Any other questions from the committee? But we have a little change in our schedule here due to Senator Saxog not being available. We're going to have to take up Senate File 425 at a later date, probably Wednesday.
This one?
A later date. Okay. So unless we have any other comments from the committee,
thank you.
The meeting is adjourned.